Srimad Bhagavatam. Very nice place. Right in your living room. Have you begun reading Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes.
How far?
We just installed it 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks?
Just 3 weeks back. And we started reading first chapter.
Okay. Happy journey. The plan is also to discuss this evening one verse from chapter 19 from Canto 1. The topic is Maharaj Parikshit. So you're familiar with who is Maharaj Parikshit? Okay, great. Is it safe to assume there's some people that might be watching that need an introduction? Who is Maharaj Parikshit? Let's do that. A little background. How far back to go? Maharaj Parikshit is the son of Abhimanyu and Uttara. Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna and Subhadra. And Abhimanyu was killed during the Kurukshetra battle when he was just 16. Several generals illegally ganged up on him, and because he was such an intense fighter, they were amazed. So they ganged up on him and created a vyuha, a circle, that he couldn't get out, and then they attacked him. Anyway, Maharaj Parikshit was still within the womb of his mother, Uttara, when this happened. So he's called the posthumous child of Abhimanyu, or the grandson of the Pandavas. And he was a celebrity even before he was born. Not too many people can claim being a celebrity before they're born. He was a celebrity because it was known that Krishna personally protected him from the Brahmastra weapon that was fired by Ashwatthama to kill, because Ashwatthama's plan to so-called please Duryodhana was to eliminate all the descendants of the Pandavas. So the 5 sons were killed, and now the remaining descendant is the son of Abhimanyu and Uttara. So he released a Brahmastra weapon that is invincible, with one exception, that's Krishna himself can stop it, or another Brahmastra can stop it. But otherwise, it can't be stopped once it's released. So Uttara appealed to Krishna, that I may be killed, but let the child in my womb be saved. The sentiments of a devoted mother. So Krishna appeared to do 2 things. One, protect the child. And the second was to show his own form to the child while still within the womb. So for the rest of his life, he would be searching or examining, because his name means. He was given that name because his whole life was, where is Krishna, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? So he was a celebrity before he was born. Then in his childhood, he exhibited great traits, and during his rule as a king, exhibited great traits. So he was a celebrated ruler of the whole world. In Prabhupada's descriptions, at least until the time of Maharaj Parikshit, which was at the juncture of the end of Krishna's pastimes and the beginning of Kali Yuga, because the end of Krishna's pastimes marks that. See, even during Kali Yuga, he was a great king. And then something very unfortunate happened in chapter 18. He did three things that are uncharacteristic of Maharaj Parikshit's quality or character. One day, while in the forest practicing his military skills for that time when it would be necessary to give protection of life, he became overwhelmed with thirst. Now, he is able to withstand the heat of a brahmastra while still within the womb. Now he's this hero, kshatriya, and he's overwhelmed with thirst. So that's not Maharaj Parikshit. So then he went in search of water and he found a hermitage in the forest, the hermitage of a sage. He entered the hermitage of the sage to request some water. The sage was engaged in meditation. Shamak Rishi was engaged in meditation. And he became angered because the sage in meditation didn't offer him the courtesy that one offers to a guest. What kind of brahmana are you? You don't even know the basics of etiquette. You don't know how to receive a guest, what to speak of a king. Insulted him. And then he left. And the third thing is, as he left outside the cottage, he saw a dead snake on the ground. On the tip of his sword, he picked up the dead snake, went back into the cottage, placed it around the neck of the king. The suitable garland for you is a dead snake. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. There are these situations in scripture where super soul within prompts a devotee or even someone who's not exactly a devotee to do something that assists Krishna's pastimes. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to be spending 7 days covering a topic for Chinese devotees on characters of Ramayana or personalities from Ramayana. And there are several. There are two very prominent ones. When Kaikeyi decides to do what she decides to do, it's a game changer. Okay, prompted by mantra, but when Valmiki is describing that event, he uses a particular Sanskrit word to introduce the event, and it's yadrichchaya, which is an interesting word, somehow or other. No apparent cause. So in this case, at least, that the not apparent cause is Supersoul, Lord Ramachandra within the heart of Kaikeyi inspired her to do what she did. And later, before and after, actually, there are specific verses that say, and she says herself later, how did this happen? Because she had affection for Ram even more than for Bharat. This is spoken before and then after. So how did that affection get taken away? Well, it wasn't just the words of mantra. It was super soul within, because it facilitated Ram's pastimes. And off he went to the forest and delivered the sages and killed the demons. Prithunai Sautunam. Wouldn't it have been the same if he just stayed in Ayodhya having a great time? Another circumstance like that is when Shurpanakha did what she did. That's the second time in the whole of Ramayana Yadrichchaya is used. There's others. Even at the end of, pardon me, this is not Bhagavatam Canto 1, but it's what I've been absorbed in, so you're hearing it. At the end of Balakanda, the scene that closes is Sita and Ram are happily enjoying life in Ayodhya. And Aranyakanda opens with a situation where Bharata decides to go visit his mother's brother, his uncle, maternal uncle. And because he goes, his dear brother and companion, Shatrughna, goes with him. And then, that's a very significant game-changing event too, because then within Dasarath's heart, he starts to think, while Bharata is wonderful, who knows, the minds of men are fickle, and maybe there'll be some difficulty because he had made a promise to Kaikeyi's father, to when he accepted his daughter, Kaikeyi as his wife, her son would become king. No one has remembered that, but who knows? Maybe Bharata knows, and who knows? His loyalty to Ram may change if he... So I should... Let's do the installation now, next day, tomorrow. Hurry up. Well, anyway... There's some game-changing events that are out of character. It's out of character for Dasarath to go against his word. So why do these things happen? And why did Maharishi Pariksit do what Maharishi Pariksit did? For the Lord's purpose. One, to be the recipient of the Bhagavatam, and two, to go back to Godhead in a jiffy. You know, the fast lane, 7 days. Lord mercy. And so Maharishi Pariksit did what he did. And after draping the snake on his neck, he started heading back for the palace. And as he's going back towards the palace, as a good person will do, he's feeling great remorse for something that he knew he did that was wrong. And what do you, how do you process, this is another, I like this section because it's something that we all encounter when we make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. And when we recognize that we make a mistake, we know, I mean, if we're scripturally tuned in, we know that we're responsible for mistakes. And when you're responsible for mistakes, something's going to come. So he's going back thinking how our scriptures teach us how one should think. So he's doing by example, and then here's what our scriptures teach us. This is from one of the favorite verses of Hare Krishna devotees. Is what happens when you're in some situation of distress. What's the verse? Tate nukampam susamikshamano. It's a prayer from, it's from Brahma's prayers, chapter 14 of Canto 10, right after the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He wanted to test Krishna. What's the extent of his mystic powers? I'll show my mystic powers and see what he does. So with his mystic power, it wasn't exactly just kidnapping, but by mystic power he took the calves and then after that the cowherd boys and put them in a cave and sealed the cave. And they were there for a whole year by his mystic power without even getting hungry or anything. It was a mystical, because demigods have powers. And they can misuse them. In this case, he did. And then, so he knew he's going to get a big reaction. Especially after he saw what he saw, when he came back and saw what he saw. You're familiar with that pastime, yes? Yes? No? A little bit? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So, the verse, it's in Bhagavad Gita purports twice, and it's referred to many times in the Bhagavatam because of its importance. When you know that a reaction is going to come, or when you're finding that here comes a reaction that you weren't expecting, either way, it's a standard response. Of course, there's some steps before this, but accepting this misfortune that's coming my way or will come my way, which is what Maharaj Pariksit is thinking, it's going to come, I don't know what it is, but misfortune is going to come, and I accept it. Because commonly when misfortune comes our way, we try to, like, figure out a way to minimize it or get around it or at least deal with it. Then in his case, Brahma's case, and Maharaj Pariksit's case, whatever it is, I'll accept it. Rather than investing my time and energy in trying to figure out how to deal with it, I'm going to just accept it and meanwhile keep my mind totally fixed on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead throughout this ordeal, whatever it is. And by so doing, I'll go back to Godhead. I mean, it says specifically, one will inherit the property of the Father. Like a son inherits the property of the Father. Who is Brahma's father? Vishnu. He'll attain the kingdom of God. Just by that one thing, staying steadfast at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Doesn't mean you have to just throw your hands up in the air and say, whatever happens, happens. I can't help it. I've been so immersed in Ramayana, my thoughts are going to Ramayana. Ram says to Lakshman, when Lakshman says, forget it. Just give me the word. I'll go kill our father. How can he take the word of a lady and just send the best of men to the forest for 14 years? Forget it. Ram should be the king. Just give me the word. I'll send to the court of Yamaraj anybody that tries to stop me. Just give me the word. Because he won't act outside of Ram's word. And Ram says, I can only understand that this is an act of providence. Because, he says, Kaikeyi was always so affectionate to me as I was to her. She treated me with more affection even than her own son. So how is this vile speech and harsh conduct, giving distress to Dasarath in this way, how is it possible, other than it's a will of providence? And when something is a will of providence, what are you going to do? You just accept it. Lakshman stands up, raises his sword, and says, a hero is not one who just submits to everything, saying, oh, it's the will of providence. Just give me the word. I'll smash them all. This shouldn't happen. And Ram just embraces him and says, I know the way you're speaking is just because of your affection for me. I don't hold it against you. But please give up this anger. upholding the word of my father is the highest thing. So he speaks with such calm manner, and Lakshman just cries. He has to accept what Ram says. So, reversals happen for the best of devotees, and at least by the Lord's arrangement, even with the Lord, there's reversal. So it's a lesson in how to accept reversals. So he doesn't know what it is. He'll quickly find out, but some very bad thing is going to happen. And I accept. Whatever is the will of the Lord, I accept. So meanwhile, back at the hermitage of Shamak Rishi, his little son, who's been off playing with other little boys, comes back home, and he goes to see his father, and he sees his father with a snake around his neck while he's doing meditation. And then he hears from some other nearby people what happened. He flies into a rage, and he has brahminical power, which he misuses. Commentary says this is a sign of the beginning of the age of Kali, when brahmanas misuse their power. And he, through mantra, he curses Maharaj Parikshit to die by the bite of a snake bird. And obviously, there's no such thing as a snake that flies. It's a mystical thing. But he's able to create a mystical thing, although he's just a little boy. As father finishes his meditation, hears what his son has done, and feels very sorry. He's a little boy, so he tells him what you did is really wrong, but what's done is done. It can't be taken back. Then he's not feeling offended. He's feeling sorry for the behavior of his son and sorry for the king. So he wants to inform the king. I think, you know, you're going to die in 7 days. But he doesn't want to go and tell him, because the king would then feel, he would feel really bad, and the king would feel really bad. The father of the son is coming. So he sends a messenger. The messenger informs Maharaj Parikshit. And he's not surprised. He's already prepared for something. And so immediately he detaches himself from his kingdom. He turns his kingdom over to his son. Janamejaya is the next king. And he takes off his royal crown and royal garments and wears mendicant's clothes and goes to the side of the river Ganges and invites all the celebrated personalities in the kingdom, which is the world, and sages. And there's a long list of who came. The who's who is really a big list from all over the universe to be present to create auspiciousness for the departure of the celebrated king. And then I'm going to read a few verses and then our verse for this evening. After all the rishis and others had seated themselves comfortably, the king, humbly, standing before them with folded hands, told them of his decision to fast until death. The fortunate king said, fortunate, it's like misfortune. So this is 119.13. The fortunate king said, indeed, we are the most grateful of all kings who are trained to get favors from the great souls. Generally, you, sages, consider royalty as refuse to be rejected and left at a distant place. I mean, it's not like they look down upon them, but worldly attachments are not the favorite of sages. So generally, sages don't intimately associate with worldly people, including kings. But you've come because you're very compassionate. Text 14. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, has graciously overtaken me in the form of a brahmana's curse. Due to my being too much attached to family life, the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that only out of fear will I detach myself from the world.
Now,
this is an expression of humility. It's not the reality, because Maharaj Parikshit was not filled with fear of anything, nor was he attached to anything. But he's portraying himself that way. This principle of dānya, or humility, is the first when Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes his Sharanagati songs, the six different limbs of surrender. He puts dānya first, or kartritve, humility. Because without humility, who's going to surrender? He's already surrendered, and it doesn't mean because he surrendered he's no longer humble. He has his profound humility. So when misfortune is coming his way, he's feeling the kindness of the personality of Godhead. For this, he doesn't call it misfortune. The great Lord has graciously benedicted me. How is this a benediction? He's relieving me of my attachments to the temporary. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam. Suhrid, from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's the best friend. And the best friend is the one who will always remind you of Krishna. And for you to be the best friend of others doesn't mean like you're always pontificating and speaking Bhagavad Gita verses or something. But your consciousness is such that you're reminding others of Krishna, along with the holistic picture of what people who care for each other do. The reminding others of Krishna is at the foreground. Smartavya satatam vishnor vismartavya najatuchit. So that's what one does with another as a friend, and Krishna is the best friend. So for one who wants to remember Krishna, Krishna will help them remember him. So he's saying, Krishna is helping me remember him, because he's young. But Krishna wants him to take him back to Godhead, so he's detaching him from the temporary in this way. And he's saying, it's only out of fear of death am I becoming detached. That's his humility. O Brahmanas, just accept me. So first he's addressing the personality of Godhead. Next he's addressing the Brahmanas. Just accept me as a completely surrendered soul. And he means it. He surrendered to them. And by surrendering to them and their mercy, he's a fit recipient for the mercy of the personality of Godhead. And that Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way, what a completely surrendered soul. For I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created bite me at once. Well, it's not going to happen at once. It's going to take 7 days. But he's saying, the misfortune, let it come. I'm not going to make some arrangement to counteract the misfortune. I'm going to be in the mindset of it can't be checked because it's a Brahmana curse. So I'm not going to obsess about, oh, some misfortune is coming. I'm just going to accept it. And I only desire that you continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. And then comes text 16. That's the intended message for this discussion. Again, offering obeisances to all you brahmanas. Now he's asking for benediction. I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I will have three things. Complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna. Now, he was the grandson of the Pandavas. I'm sure he heard about the virtue of his father, but especially celebrated is his grandparents, not only Arjuna, but all the Pandavas. And his whole life growing up, we can only imagine, he's hearing everywhere he went about the glories of the Pandavas. Bards would recite and Brahmanas recite, and it was for the upliftment and pleasure, but that's the sound vibration he was surrounded with. Not just from family life, but from spiritual life, together with family life. You mean to be born in the family of the Pandavas, and just a quick, short period of time thereafter. So, he's accustomed to that kind of message, and particularly qualified to do that are the Brahmanas, and he wants to hear the glories of the personality of Godhead with attachment to his lotus feet. So he's very Krishna conscious already, and he wants to be never moved from that position of attachment. Now, we know from scripture, we know from Bhagavad Gita, whatever one is attached to, at the time of death, that's where the mind goes. And wherever the mind goes at the time of death, that's where you go. He's already attached, and now he's praying, if I have to take birth again, let me continue to remain attached. And to the lotus feet implies, minimally, the mode of service. When you're at the feet of someone, at the lotus feet of the Lord, it's in the mood of dasya, just being the servant of the Lord, however, whatever is his desire. Attachment. Not just dutiful, but with feeling, with attachment. Like parents with their children. There's attachment, it's natural. Affection for children. So you don't have to go to attachment school, it's natural. So similarly, transcendental attachment, then it's just natural. The thoughts of the person who's attached are going to the person who you're attached to, and particularly here, in this mood of service. Lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So that maybe is sufficient, but he wants something more than that, or in addition to that, or the companion of that is the association of devotees of the Lord. Association with his devotees. And one of the reasons one values the association of devotees is because devotees remind you of Krishna by their character, pleasing character, by their words, by their gestures, by their everything about a devotee is, but especially carrying messages of Krishna. Katayantashyamam nityam tushanticha ramanticha. We like association of devotees for those reasons. Krishna katha, just as we're doing. Katayantashyamam nityam tushanticha ramanticha. Satisfied and happy. Now, there's no such thing. One will never get to the stage of material satisfaction. There can be, at a certain point, let's say anything. You have a nice meal. Okay, I'm satisfied. But then later you're hungry. Or anything you could think of. You know, something with kids in school or something with your career or something. And you achieve something, and it fades, and it's really the satisfaction is never achieved. I need more. I need to do it again. I need this. It's never satisfied. One of Prabhupada's favorite subjects is there's no satisfaction, and it's no surprise. There's songs about it. Expecting happiness and getting distress. So wanting the association of devotees is just to get on the other side of that wanting something temporary and hearing we take responsibility for the temporary, but the real happiness and contentment is not, oh, I was able to take care of something temporary. There's no deeper meaningful satisfaction in that. And then whatever it is that we have achieved, it's also gone. And then we're lamenting. So the real position of satisfaction comes through the association of devotees that's helping us to go to Krishna's shelter further, and loving exchanges that are pleasing to Krishna in the association of devotees, of different types of relationships and service. And then finally, that's a pretty good package, but he adds, and friendly relations with all living beings. Now that's a challenge. I mean, just a little sharing. When I grew up, I didn't know anything about Vedic culture, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, nothing. But the teaching that I had received from childhood was a Christian teaching, and that there's a little passage in the New Testament that I really struggled with, because there's a little place where Christ is with his disciples, and they're asking him, of all the different teachings, what's the essence? And he says two things: love God with all your heart and with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So I took that seriously, and I struggled with number two. And the way that I struggled was kind of an existential dilemma of why do people want to love and be loved. So why do they treat each other so badly? And you know, it became a problem for me because I took it seriously. Because I didn't have an answer. It just doesn't make sense. And it didn't just like, okay, it doesn't make sense, let's just move on. So I kept asking and asking. And I went to visit my older brother in the middle of the country, and he didn't have an answer. So he took me to the priest. I asked the priest, he didn't have an answer. The priest said, I think you need a psychiatrist. They don't have answers. But the answer is pretty simple. No one had the understanding of what it means. So when I became a devotee, I could understand what it means. It's Pandita Samadarshana. You see on the spiritual platform. So then there's the covering of the soul, or Brahmabhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangsati. That teaching is very clear in Bhagavad Gita. And it's not unclear, it's not spoken. There's the soul spoken of in all scriptures, but it wasn't a clear understanding. So having friendly relations with all living entities doesn't mean you have to like somebody that's a bully or does hurtful things, etc. You don't have to like the behavior, embrace the bad behavior. You have to embrace a tiger, but you act appropriately according to the situation, but have a favorable disposition towards the living entity within that body, even people that do bad things. Even people that do bad things. He wanted that. Just because the little Ramayan absorption once again coming out. It's Sita and Radharani are like the emblem of that quality. When Hanuman asked Sita's permission, let me kill all these Rakshasis. I heard how they were tormenting you, and I can't take it. I want to destroy them. Just give me the word. And Sita said, they're just doing the bidding of Ravan, and they just have bad association. They should be forgiven. Let them become saved. When Ram comes, redeems, they should become freed from this terrible circumstance that their life has found themselves in. Now they've been tormenting her left, right, and sideways for 10 months. Day and night, and she's compassionate towards them. And then there's the Radharani example of the jackal. You know the jackal story? Yes? Just this morning, I was in Palatine, staying at a condominium complex like this, and behind the buildings there's a retention pond, and the retention pond used to have like minimum 7 up to 9 ducks. They would go somewhere else at night and then come flying in as the sun came up, and you know, and hang out all day and go back wherever they spent the night. But one day, the day before yesterday, they disappeared. And I wondered why. Then I figured it out. There's two coyotes that are over there. There's used to be like a forest preserve, and they would hang out over there. So they came out for something to eat. So the ducks took off. So just this morning, the sun is just coming up, And there was a raccoon, like a guy with a... You don't normally see... Do you see animals around here? Yes? Oh, good. He was like, you know, had looked like a bandit with his big chubby guy looking around. And then all of a sudden these two coyotes came and he went zoom right into this big hole in the ground. It's a hole in the ground for when there's heavy rain. The rain goes through a pipe and then goes into this retention pond. So, you know, the street up there where the houses are doesn't get flooded. It has a way of drainage. It goes into the retention pond. So the raccoon went zooming right into the hole in the ground. And the jackal was sniffing, or jackal, coyote, whatever he was. The two of them, tawny colored, light colored. But they didn't go jumping into that little hole. Their bodies were too big, so the raccoon was safe. And then off they went to, you know, look for something to eat, some living entity to bother. So in Braja, there was a nice Radharani story. She and some of the gopis, they saw some boys, gopas, making a big sound and holding sticks and trying to light the stick and you know, throwing stones. So they went over to see what's going on. And they found out that there's a jackal that had entered into a hole in the ground. And she shooed them away and coaxed the jackal out, carried the jackal in her arms, and pronounced, you know, that you should be safe in this life, and your next life you can come and be one of my associates. So jackals aren't nice beings. I mean, amongst the four-legged animals, they're not higher class. But so aside from animals, just being compassionate to others when there's reason to be, you know, a little apprehensive about getting near them, either, you know, people that are harsh in their speech. So we can keep our distance from people that are harsh in their speech. But there should be some good feeling towards the soul and wishing well for the person that's struggling with this harsh behavior, because there's something inside they're really hurting, and that's why they're behaving in this harsh way. It's not easy to do that, especially when you see that harshness directed to somebody close to you or to you. It's not easy. But the spiritual position is having, at least on the platform of the soul, having a friendly disposition towards all living beings. Pandita Samadarshana. So those three things. And attachment, association, and friendly regard for other living beings. And much later, this is Canto 1, Chapter 19. In Canto 10, Chapter 41, Krishna is entering Mathura. He goes to the home of Sudama the florist. And Sudama the florist, he's in ecstasy. He gives garlands to both Krishna and Balaram. But Krishna knows his mood of of devotion. So he says, you take a benediction, anything you like. It's yours. Blank check. Just put in how many zeros you want. With a one in front. And the Brahmin asks for the same three things. Not verbatim, but the same three things. So this tells us something that we're down here, we're not up there. We're not at Maharaj Pariksit level or the florist in Mathura's level. But it tells us something that through the Bhagavatam's message, something to be aspired for, something worthy. Especially the third one, because there's hardships and difficulty and troubles that come our way, and through some agency of someone somewhere, you know, good times and bad times. It's part of this world, and there's instruments for those good times, bad times. And how to maintain a friendly disposition towards those instruments of difficulty. Easier said than done. But that's what he's praying for, and that's something for us to aspire for. So happy journey with your reading Srimad Bhagavatam. How much time are you spending daily? 30 minutes every day.
Not for just Bhagavatam, maybe other things too.
Good. Very good. Very good. Okay, so we'll take some time to see if there's some discussion. There are host and hostess. You get first opportunity to speak something if you'd like.
We would like to know one question. Since we are very early in the... We wanted to know how to raise children in Krishna.
How to do what?
How to raise children in Krishna consciousness.
How to raise children in Krishna consciousness. Perfect question for a sannyasi. Well, you know the principles. I'll repeat the principles that you already know. three things. Create an incubation chamber that's conducive, an atmosphere in the home, by however, whatever, in different ways. Second, try to show by example. Now, when a child from the early age, if the child, this child is born probably close to the time that you became devotees or started practicing bhakti, so that the soul is a very special soul, being born in a devotional atmosphere right from the very beginning. So that's a big responsibility. So try internally is the starting point, and externally, show by example. And so atmosphere, teach by example. And the third is recognize propensities, and not in a helicopter parenting way, but in a gracious way, provide resources that match or correspond with the nature of your child. Let them grow in the ways that they're inclined to. And you know, you like this little thing of the coin and the book. So you see what their tendencies are, and you facilitate those tendencies with Krishna at the center, of course. But you nurture the psychophysical nature of the child. Then, you know, there's the incubation chamber, the atmosphere that's conducive. So there's no guarantee what the outcome is going to be. But it's like gardening. You make a nice, make the soil nice before you put the seed in. And when you put the seed in, you continue to make the soil nice. You know, pull weeds and some water, not too much. And you know, so you make a nice atmosphere in the garden. And you tend, but allow, so this third one is important, is you allow the even though the child is small, and there's a certain amount of boundaries that parents need to place for their children, but you allow them within those boundaries to be themselves and facilitate with Krishna at the center. Now, there's so many, many, many details. So many details. These are just some simple principles.
What I would like to ask you was, I know Maharaj Parikshit, he recognizes that he made a mistake, and you said
could you turn the speaker this way, because I can't hear his voice so well. Try again.
You were saying Maharaj Parikshit had made a mistake, and we say we do mistakes in our life every day, and just accept it what it comes. So when things make you difficult in your life and you become distressed, how to keep oneself motivated?
Well,
how did Parikshit be motivated?
Two things. Accept things doesn't mean you're a punching bag. You know, you have the responsibility to respond to things that come. And you may be, you just remain neutral. It may be you say something, it may be you walk away, it may be you raise your voice. But whatever is appropriate, let it come from the place of service, not from the place of the mind. And the mind's fear, anger, you know, resentment, and all those, let it come from the position of service. So then that's the answer to your question, how do you handle it? You can't handle it in a Krishna conscious way unless there's some roots of Krishna consciousness. So absorption in the mood of service carries you through those circumstances of misfortune and the good fortune. Because the good fortune could be, oh, now is my time for enjoying. And so rather than going into the good fortune as a time for enjoying, this is Krishna's mercy meant for my service to him. This is Krishna's mercy meant for my purification and my opportunity to serve him in a different way. So it's the root is the mood of service, the humble mood of service. And you cultivate that starting with your chanting and your reading and, you know, in the core of the family, and then in the circumstances outside the core of the family. So in your heart, in the family, and going out in concentric circles. But it's the mood of humble service. That's the antidote for, you know, the misery portion of material life and the trying to be the enjoyer portion of material life. Not meant for my enjoyment, it's meant for Krishna's service. Humble mode of service. That's the ballast that keeps the ship from tilting too much.
Yes, Maharaj.
No? Anything?
Nothing, Maharaj.
Not a parenting question, huh? Okay. Let's see if there's online questions.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is with regards to Maharaja Parikshit accepting misfortune, and I'm curious as to why when Durvasa Muni had that opportunity, he had the Sudarshan Chakra chasing him, he was trying to evade misfortune.
Yeah.
Why?
He wasn't Krishna conscious. Now, in contrast, Maharaj Ambarish was Krishna conscious. But it's not because Maharaj Ambarish did what he did, we're supposed to do what he did. The acceptance, as I said before, acceptance doesn't mean you're a punching bag. You may do something in relation to a misfortune that's coming your way. They have all kinds of options and possibilities to consider. But the acceptance is the starting point. Okay?
I do have one more question.
Okay.
So, does the super soul prompt that you were explaining at the very beginning, does it happen only for devotees or
no.
does it?
No. He's the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness for all living entities.
I was wondering if karma was playing an influence.
Well, it certainly plays an influence, but he super soul, sees the disposition of living entity and prompts accordingly. Here's two examples. Prabhupada's example, the thief. He's sneaking around at night. Here comes somebody. Lay low. Don't go yet. Okay, now they're gone. It's the super soul prompt. Or the other example, the cat's in the kitchen, waits for the housewife to leave. Okay, now jump on the table and get the milk. Super soul. So super soul is acting with everyone.
Thank you, Maharaj.
By karma. Like what allows animals to know that there's a hurricane coming or a tsunami coming? You know, they run. And humans don't have that sense. So where do they get that? Super soul. And, you know, but it's karma. They get in that particular body instead of a human body. But then they have equipment. And super soul is conducting the affairs for all living entities. Maya Jakshina Prakriti Suyase Sacharacharam. Yeah.
This is a question from online.
Okay.
Maharaj, could you please clarify what do you mean by favorable disposition towards bullies or people committing violence?
A favorable disposition is towards the soul, not towards the behavior. That's the distinction.
Question from Tirumaleshwar Nayak Prabhu. Friendly disposition and tolerance sometimes becomes very difficult since others do not act or behave as per Shastra. How my consciousness should be and treat others in spite of seeing others are acting wrong.
Well, the first starting point is correct yourself before being disturbed because others aren't correcting themselves. That's my answer. When you become experienced at correcting yourself, you'll find it much easier to not just overlook the faults of others, but be the well-wisher of those that have faults. And be given intelligence by Supersoul to know how you can be of assistance to those who are not following scriptures. I mean, you be the good follower. You be the acharya and teach by your example, inside and outside. And then you'll be able to accomplish, your sphere of influence will expand by your purity.
That's all we have.
That's it. Okay. Okay. Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.